Reality, a podcast that combines lived experience with the scientific knowledge of burnout to help listeners prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. My name is Shannon Swales, a human and clinical psychologist with both lived experience and scientific knowledge and skills in burnout. It is my hope that the values of authenticity, compassion, wisdom, and community shine through in each and every episode of the pod. Episodes that share my own and others' lived experiences of burnout, and interviews expert guests to help listeners build awareness and hope to prevent, recover, and grow from burnout. The views, opinions, tips, and the like expressed by myself or my guests are not a replacement of personalized therapy. Just like I have done for myself and many of my guests, I encourage those of you that are suffering to seek professional help. In episode 30, I sit down with Shannon Bowman from Create Balance Psychotherapy and Counseling, a passionate mental health professional and a pioneer in therapeutic approaches and business innovations to support the clients and organizations that come to his business. I interview Shannon on a very important topic, working with the organization to support worker well-being. Our conversation takes us over a number of subtopics to unpack this area, things like the common pitfalls that workplaces, organizations, teams, leaders fall into that contribute to poor employee well-being or burnout. Shannon shares case examples of organizations that he has worked with or his team has worked with that help demonstrate what works and what doesn't. He also stresses the importance of both acknowledging the organizational factors and also the individual factors that contribute to poor employee well-being and burnout. He also discusses with us and shares with us what organizations can do and individuals can do to help build a psychosocially safe workplace. And also we unpack some of those challenges that organizations and even the worker, the employee, come up against in doing so, and also the benefits that in investing in those things that can help the environment be a psychologically and socially safe one. So quite a well-rounded discussion. So grab that cuppa or get in that car to drive to work, however you're listening to this podcast episode today. And please be sure to let me know your thoughts afterwards. You can get in contact with me or hit like, or better yet, follow to stay updated with episode releases. But thank you so much for listening, and take care of you. Hi, Shannon, and welcome to When Burnout Becomes Reality. It's wonderful to finally have you here to talk about this really important topic of workplace wellbeing.
Well, thanks for having me, Shannon. I will definitely remember your name. It's great to talk to you as well. And yeah, thanks for inviting me along. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, it's going to be a little bit surreal with using our names, Shannon and Shannon. Well, first of all, I always like to ask my guests to introduce themselves a little bit about, you know, who you are, but what brings you to be talking about this topic as well, a bit of your professional background.
So I'm a director of a mental health service down in Geelong, Victoria. We're a team of 11. So we've got a range of psychs, social workers, and relationship counsellors. We've been in business for about 6 years, and we predominantly help the Geelong community with things like post-traumatic stress disorder, other trauma-related things like one-off events or complex trauma. Mm-hmm. And we also work with different organisations through providing them mental health and wellbeing services. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Geelong. I've got two young girls, Lucy and Georgia, two and four. So they pretty much take up all my time when I'm not doing work. I also like to do speaking opportunities with different organizations and talking about mental health topics like burnout and neurodiversity, and very much see myself as someone who likes to innovate and push the boundaries to make treatment more accessible to people, whether that's through technology or whether that's through other innovative in-person approaches, like things like EMDR. And yeah, we use other equipment in the office like neurofeedback and medical laser equipment just to help people get to the results they want in a quicker time frame.
Wow. There's a few things there that stand out for me. One of them, when you mentioned your children and you said they're age 2 and 4, it made me think of I've got two furry children, not the humankind, but they're the same age, 2 and 4, Hannah and the eldest and Toby, but obviously not the same as raising children at all. I took the easier route. I know that with dogs, but also just the wealth of just the variation in what you do, with the trauma side of things, but also the innovation side of things of bringing different modalities in to help the clients as well, to be able to, as you said, achieve their outcomes. There really seems to be a passion there for you in being able to help, your community and help them with trauma, and also helping, which is more to our topic as well today, of around workplaces and helping organizations as well with supporting the health and well-being of their staff. So yeah, I remember when I discovered you, like, don't know if we, like a lot of the guests I've met first off through social media, and in this case LinkedIn, and just seeing the posts and seeing the advocacy and the sharing of what you do really, and I can't remember who reached out to who first. I think it was me to you, I don't know, but seeing what you're doing on the burnout side of things and with the workplace organizational culture really sparked my interest, considering the overlap in what we do.
Yeah, and I was really interested in the work that you were doing. I would see the posts that you were doing and the groups that you were running, and your own sort of lived experience and what brought you to the topic as well. So yeah, I was intrigued by your work and keen to chat. So when you reached out to me, I was definitely happy to jump on and chat.
And this is really the beautiful thing. I remember in my burnout experience, I turned to social media. I don't know if it was really a conscious choice. I guess it was. At the time, it was more connecting with other people who were going through lived experiences. But as I moved through mine and recovered and had decided to move professionally into that area, it was finding other people who were doing the same, or not necessarily the same, but in the similar area, but doing things differently to learn off each other. Because it was very much a thing in what I call my pre-burnout career in psychology that I neglected in terms of networking and connecting and learning off each other, or just knowing what else is out there that you can connect with and to expand from. So yeah, I'm glad that I got to connect with you as well. So hey, let's get into this. What I was really wanting to explore to start with, to help the audience, is understanding a bit more around, with burnout, what kind of organizational, or even it might be leadership or team factors that you've noticed through your work that can contribute to that poor well-being of the employee, the individual, not just burnout. I know it's other things like trauma as well. Just what some of those, causal or contributing factors are.
Yeah, so there's, from what I observe and the stories that I hear, and from both individual and organizational level, there's themes that come out. So things like you might not have a really big control over what you're doing day to day. So someone else might be in control of your diary. So things change, appointments change, and that can be quite an anxiety provoking thing if you're always having things moving around. So an imbalance in things like job demands, so going from not much work to really peaks of work. So like really driving home for like a couple of weeks, but then like coming off a cliff and like having no work. So all this sort of changes in job demands. And then while all this is going on, things like management or leadership are not actually in touch with what's going on, say on the ground floor. Like there's a disconnect between the levels. Things like COVID, for example, like everyone in COVID, that whole period that we went through, we went from, like yourself, seeing clients in person, but then it went from that to having to change to online. Then some people went back to in person, then online. So this frequent having to be vigilant and watchful of what's actually going to be happening, it makes our nervous system sort of become primed to be looking for these signs of danger. And if we're just doing that all the time, our body starts to get used to it. So I work with a lot of police officers, paramedics, firefighters, and they'd be some of the people that I would sort of think are the most burnt out. But burnout doesn't just stick to those types of organisations. Allied health professionals, psychologists, anyone who's dealing with very emotional sort of subjects and have to hold a lot of that. It's a really hard thing to sort of switch off. And definitely COVID was one of that ones where people noticed that they were now online all the time. So they weren't doing those normal day-to-day things where they'd be having a chat at the water fountain or driving home from work or catching up for a coffee after work. All those things were like recharging a little bit, but all those disappeared. So you're just constantly vigilant for a number of years. Your whole nervous system just changes and your brain structure changes and parts of your brain are actually starting to shrink. The gray matter is starting to change in your brain. So there's so many factors going on there, which is one of the challenges of burnout. It's not just one cause to the whole problem.
That's it, isn't it? It's I always talk about it being individual, environmental, and that's encompassing, you know, the work environment, but home environment as well, but also culturally, you know, from a wider lens. That's something I haven't covered much in the podcast yet, but just how we, I suppose, our culture in terms of the expectations or how we live. It's such a multifaceted issue. There's not one causal factor. What you were sharing there, that the work demands, but the changing work demands and bringing in, you know, how COVID shaped that too. And what you were sharing there too with the work type or the workload in the sense of, you know, exposure to vulnerable others and that kind of work and not having those practices at work and life in terms of that breaks up that as well. Like you said that, you know, when we went into online due to COVID, a lot of those things unknowingly, well, got taken away, but unknowingly they were actually helping us, our nervous system and our brain having a bit of a break, that rest, going for that coffee, you know, with a colleague or, you know, driving home from work, listening to your favorite podcast or whatever that might be. Yeah, we lost that.
Absolutely, yeah. Like they're only small things, but if you imagine you've had like a really busy day and like you're dealing with complex traumas or different things, if you're an allied health profession, like that can actually be the thing that brings down your nervous system quite a lot if you've got a 40-minute drive or train or commute to get back. It can bring you down a lot. So instead of leaving your home office to the lounge room, it's not a very big gap to bring down energy. So then you're taking that over to there and it just kind of doesn't have the same effect as if you were sort of going about your normal life. And the thing that I've also noticed, like touching on that COVID topic, like after COVID, people didn't go back to behaving how they did before frequently. So some of the people I worked with, I think I was mentioning to you before, we did a pilot program with cybersecurity firm and they changed the way that they were doing work through COVID, all online. So they were able to do far more meetings, sales calls and client follow-ups online because they didn't have that travel between one appointment to another, which would take time. So they were doing a lot more billable sort of work and like growing in that way, but also starting to, their mental health was declining because they didn't have that gap. They weren't actually looking after themselves. And what
Yeah.
happened when they came back into being in person and stuff like that, they were having these internal expectations that I should be doing more. I really should be still that performer who was seeing 15 clients a day, but now I'm have to be seeing 10. So that internal battle actually made some of their behaviors change after it as well. And we had to sort of help them unlearn some of that.
Yeah, I hear that. It makes me think of there was just that I don't even know where it came from, but it must have been something I read or was hearing. But they were just talking about how our, just more from that cultural perspective, how like technology has helped us be able to simplify a lot of things, streamline a lot of things, yet we're more burnt out than ever, or we're more stressed than ever. And it was sort of like, well, wouldn't that mean that we'd be less stressed because there's more time for rest or play or fun or connecting with our loved ones? Because we've got like, I'm thinking of just what's a stir, not stir, air fryer, air fryer that makes, cooking a lot more quicker. Or you just think, or buying a microwave meal. But it's just with what you're sharing about your experience with that workplace, the cybersecurity, it's like we then, oh, well, let's do more stuff, more productive, goal-oriented stuff. And that's what I see a lot of individuals doing just in their life in general. And they're not utilizing that time to do those rest things that we all need to support our health and well-being. I was just, yeah, we pack more of the productive stuff in. And yeah, it just made me think of that when you,
I
yeah.
see that so frequently in the people that I work with. There's just a culture of more, doing more,
More.
but there's not actually sort of the education from the universities and the workplaces around actually to be able to do more and be a high performer. Your rest is equally as important as your output. So there's this disconnect between, well, how do we educate our team, but not educate them to the level where they're slacking off. So they're just confused with like what actually helping people be high performing and thriving is, I find. Because cultures of workplaces of like, let's get more done, let's grow revenue, let's see more clients is only as good as the people who are actually there. And if they're dropping off after 2 years because they're becoming burnt out and they can't sustain that, well, there's obviously a leadership problem and a culture problem of not being educated around how to rest, how to turn off, what to do when you get home, what to do when an email comes through on the weekend, what to do when a colleague calls you up and asks, can we have a chat about some workplace thing at 7 o'clock at night? Like all these types of things, like no one's shown what to actually do.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that what you were sharing there was about this, but it sort of sparked my head, in my head anyway. I thought that often the well, I'm wondering what your experience has been with these organizations and sort of teams, leaders, management, that because you're talking about that lack of education or knowing what to do or what's needed to help, your employees be productive but also well. Yeah, I'm just wondering, yeah, what you've noticed is lacking in organizations, because you only know what you know, right? Like I've often thought, like no one's, very rarely people are intentionally setting out to harm others, right? To make their employees unwell. It's more what I'm hearing more and more, it's a lack of knowing, a lack of knowledge, or how do we create a workplace that is psychosocially safe? How do I take care of the employees in respect to where they have responsibility? Obviously, individual has a lot of that responsibility. But yeah, is it that they are lacking that knowledge, that know-how? They're just like, I don't know what to do.
Well, I'll use an example of one of my team. So our practice manager, hardest worker ever, would do anything for anyone on our team, sometimes to her own detriment. Like she'll just work so hard. And one of the things I see as my role as the director of the organization is to educate around, well, it's not actually your role to be helping team members outside of hours. It's not your role to come in early and try to get more work done before you're meant to start work. It's not your role to try to fix other people's mistakes so they don't sort of have their own consequences. Because all those types of things will lead to being more vigilant, more vigilant, more vigilant, working more and more, and not sort of having those clear boundaries around, well, what is enough? Because one of the things with people who experience burnout, they never really know when enough is enough. Like they'll just work more because they think they need to, but they don't have that sort of off switch sometimes.
No, like what I hear and I have seen in the studies as well, one of the important things that you demonstrate there is as the team leader and director is that being very clear on what the roles are of that person and what they're not, and intervening and communicating that where you see that blurring happening on that person to help redirect them of what is there within their responsibility and their role and what isn't. Because that's something I have seen in the literature where organizations haven't been very clear on what the role is for the person. I haven't seen anything about like sort of that follow-up and reiterating that, but that makes sense, you know. But where there's unclear role, you know, descriptions, and where they might be not necessarily taking advantage, meaning to, but like maybe reinforcing some of those unhealthy habits, because here's a hard worker doing a lot of, you know, things. I have heard that unintentionally rewarding the behavior, you know, because they, you know, at the time getting more out of that person.
Yeah, and like they're getting more out of that person, but that person's also getting a reward themselves. So they're getting a little ding, ding, ding in their brain. They're like, okay, I feel good. I've been seen as someone who works hard, and now that's part of my identity. I'm gonna carry that along until it becomes too much to carry, and then it's becoming like a problem, and then it's becoming like an organizational problem, and it just kind of trickles out through everyone.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm like nodding my head going, that was me. Like, and I remember one of my earlier podcast guests, Davina, who's a good friend of mine, a psychologist, and she said early on in her career, you know, getting rewarded for, you know, going above and beyond, not just for her clients, but also for the workplace, and being rewarded for that. But yeah, she took ownership as well, like realizing that the reward was also a hit for her because she felt good about herself. It was a feedback loop to say, hey, well done me, that self-worth growing. And and same for me, my worth was caught up in what I did, you know, what I do. And yeah, none of that was okay for a recipe for well-being in the future or long-term. So yeah, as you mentioned earlier, you know, unlearning, helping people unlearn these habits. So, I mean, you mentioned there, actually before we got on to our recorded chat, talking about some of the things that you actually do to help intervene on that workplace level to help organizations and supporting their employees. And I was wondering if you could, share a little bit of the insights of what could help, you know, help with addressing or preventing, I suppose, you know, poor well-being, burnout in the workplace.
Yeah, so I think it comes from like both from what the organization will do and then what the individual will bring into it. So speaking from the organization perspective, having clear policies and guidelines and documentation in like onboarding process around topics like mental health, what they're allowed to access in forms of like their leave, their entitlements, educating them on what to look for in their own work environment for psychological hazards, helping them understand what the boundaries are with workplace and what's expected them outside of the workplace, teaching them about the signs of what burnout might look like, the extreme fatigue, the sort of overwhelming pressure that builds up in you, feeling like you're racing but not getting much done, and you're kind of just starting from educating the person from the onboarding start point all the way through to when they exit and leave the organization. So it never really stops, I would think. Just because I would mention burnout at the first point doesn't mean they're going to remember it 6 months into their job after they've been working extremely hard or diligently. There needs to be constant education and sort of that connection between upper management, middle management, and down to people who are working down on the floor. Or, so there needs to be more communication around these types of things, because if you've got a high performing team and everyone's doing great, that's good for business. But the moment one person starts to feel burnt out, it's quickly going to start to spread through the organization if it's not addressed correctly. So, yeah, having people in leadership who are emotionally intelligent, have the foresight to envision what their work will actually do to someone's psychological well-being, is vital as well. You can't have someone in a leadership position who doesn't know anything about emotions or how to communicate. And it's just directive, directive, directive. There need to actually be people who are, yeah, available in that capacity.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually chatting of Carolyn, and I'm trying to remember her last name, but she was part of a panel, online panel I did last year. Her and a couple of other people speaking on the topic of burnout, and she was talking to the importance of training our leaders in terms of these really vital now in our modern day workplace and what we know now and what's important to be able to get the productivity as well. So, having a, vitality in the business and it be doing its thing is having leaders who have the knowledge and know-how around the emotional intelligence, which I know it's something that I've had to develop over the years. And I thank my psychology training for that because my parents, God love them, beautiful people, but they didn't have that because they didn't have that guidance. And so a lot of it I learned through my practice. But yeah, the need for leaders and Carolyn Sweeney, McSweeney, that's her last name. Carolyn was talking about, yeah, the importance of that and that our leaders need that. And some are really screaming out for that help and that want to develop in that area so they can provide that in their businesses, in the workplaces. But often it's something they don't have or are not supported to get within their workplace. But yeah, a really
Yeah,
important point you mentioned.
on that topic, yeah, the leaders. So we just worked with at the end of last year a big national media company, and we trained their board of directors on all this stuff that we're just talking about now. And some of the feedback that we got from it was that they as a team feel more connected and psychologically safe around each other, and they actually understand each other now. So when someone is trying to convey some kind of concern or issue, it's no longer an impersonal sort of attack. They actually get it a bit more. And that's what I was talking about before. That's the organization who wants to roll this out across their whole company. And we did that from the top down. So we're educating the leaders first, because they're going to be the one who has to create the cultural change and actually are going to lead and impact their whole team. So yeah, hopefully that comes to fruition in the next few months or 12 months, because it will be a big project. But yeah, the leaders definitely need to be able to have that capacity to do that sort of work.
No, it's such a shift, right? Like for any business, any company to and large companies, but all shapes and sizes, that it's such a huge undertaking to, get in the experts like yourself and your team and making this very vital and important shift. But it sounds like it's really bringing the benefits, what you just shared there is that people feeling safe, psychologically safe to share what's going on for them, people feeling more connected. And geez, we know as mental health professionals, we know that connection is so vital to our well-being. And when we feel disconnected in our life, from others, that's such a huge contributing factor to our mental health and well-being, so physical health as well. So to hear that they feel more connected, and just hearing, because that's something I've seen in the studies too, and it makes complete sense, and it needs to be top down. And I've worked, I won't name them, but I've worked in a company where, on the certain level, the team and the management were fantastic in terms of their care and well-being and support of the staff. And then, but when you went further up, like the next two levels, there was no care, there was no want or desire to keep in mind the well-being of the employee as they make changes or demands in the workplace. Yeah, and if it wasn't for that, the leadership in the where I was working, I would have left it earlier. But eventually did on that grounds is like this place is not safe enough for my well-being going forward because there's not that top down as it's got to come from the top.
Yeah, like change management is like it's huge. Like if you're not keeping your like staff really well informed about what's happening and what are the resources and what to actually expect over the short term, midterm and long term, like it's hard for someone to feel settled and safe if they don't know who their team leader is going to be next month, if they don't know what part of the organization they're going to be working in once this merger happens. Like all these types of things play on the individual's mind constantly. And you and I both see them in our clinics, coming in, talking about how they're feeling anxious and talking about how there's this unstable thing going on. But that all influences the individual, and they're the psychological hazards that need to be sort of spoken about more clearly and articulated in meetings and however you're educating your team.
But that need for top down, whether it's change management or business as usual, because with this place it was even business as usual. But yeah, any changes which were quite rapid, rapidly occurring there in the end, there was none of that. Yeah, I've seen change management done really well in previous employers that I've worked for. So it's like, but like you were touching upon there, and I wanted to, tease that out a little bit more, the benefits that you notice that come out of putting in place in these organizations and teams leadership practices that help support, the overall culture of the workplace in terms of well-being, but of course the individuals. Yeah, well, I think you mentioned one of the benefits like connection, feeling safe. But what are some of the other things that you hear or see, from organizations where they have made these changes or these changes already exist? They're quite psychologically safe. Like, yeah, what are the benefits?
So I think if we just go back to the one I was mentioning before, how the board of directors started to feel a lot more safe with each other. They'd had challenges like before we came in with miscommunication and deadlines being missed because of ongoing issues with burnout, with work demands, and all types of things. So we were coming in to kind of help stabilize and educate. So our role doing the workshops is to sort of help the team understand each other's individual working style. So we assess each individual and share the results with the individual and then bring them together so they can see why the other person works in that way and what that means and how to get the best out of them. So they go from a place of being quite triggered by each other and the way each other works and the way each other communicates, which all those things, those sort of micro things that go on day to day, actually add up to a pretty big weight if you're carrying that around all the time. So we help to sort of strip away all that so people can start to see each other a lot clearer in the organization and then get the best out of each other and know how to communicate with each other. Because just because a workplace has ideas around how you should communicate with each other and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, not everyone actually adheres to that. And some people, for whatever reason, might be communicating in one way, and people take a lot of criticism or take that badly. So we help to make sure people understand each other before they go jumping to the worst case scenarios, sort of before they start building up these stories in their head. Because the moment like someone starts to build up a bit of a story about what's going on and why people are doing this and what this means for them and what they're going to have to do to protect themselves, either work harder or try to be better, this all sort of undercurrents of what's going to lead someone to burnout. So if we try to strip away that, and then, yeah, people are able to communicate with each other a lot better. And Yeah, the follow-ups is what is important in those sort of roles is, yeah, working alongside them and kind of holding their hand for a while, just so like you can have that check-in to see where they're at.
Yeah, helping with that integration of the
Yeah.
new knowledge and
Yeah.
skills that you've imparted.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, it makes me think of what I do on an individual level with clients when they're having interpersonal difficulties. And it's, yeah, often we are making that story up in our mind and getting to know what that narrative is, but that stripping that back more to, I mean, I don't have the other person, but understanding each other, like understanding first that other person and what's actually truthful, factual, and knowing that, yeah, what you're making up in your mind is not, it's not grounded in reality. The only it's about seeking that out from the other person, what finding out what makes them tick or what they mean or what's going on there, and then the skills to be able to communicate to help with that. But I really love that. Made me actually think as you shared that case example of the challenges with that workplace, with the miscommunication and burnout occurring. I was just wondering what other challenges that your organizations have come with you with in their workplace that work is contributing to burnout or well-being of clients, just what some of those other challenges organizations and leadership are facing, teams are facing.
I think like they're facing retention of staff, especially in the health profession. There's so many health-related jobs, whether it's psychologists, social workers, OTs, nurses,
Doctors,
doctors. Like
losing.
Australia's struggling in that regard. So the moment someone starts to feel like burnt out, or they start to feel a bit of a disconnect from their work, they no longer are tied to that sort of workplace anymore. They're quite free to move on. So, from an organizational level, I see that people are wanting to understand how they can keep people employed, and what are some of the reasons that they're not staying around. Is it just because they found something better, or is it because there's something going on that could be done about it, making the workplace more safe, making it more user-friendly? What are the small things that are causing resistance in their day-to-day life? Is it the commute? Is it the bright lights in the office? Is it the noisy things outside making it hard to concentrate? What are these things that can cause issues for people?
That's so cool. It's just so heartwarming to actually hear from your live, your experience of these organizations. There are organizations out there wanting to understand, what the hell's happening and how can we improve? How can we do better? If there is anything that we can do better, that because that's what it takes, right? Even on an individual level, nothing's going to change if we're not going to change. So, organization as well, but hearing that they want to, and I know that exists, but like hearing it from someone who works with organizations who are reaching out and going, hey, need your help. What are some of those things that, and I'm not sure if that's something I'm sure it's, whether you can answer or not, but like, what those factors are. Maybe we've talked about them already, but that are causing people to leave, maybe in the health industry, those, why they people aren't retaining staff.
Well, I'm not a psychologist myself, but I sort of am part of that community, and I see what goes on in the whole education process for psychologists. So going through, then being a provisional, then doing either your clinical or your 5+1. But if we use the example of provisional psychs going into private practice as a provisional, while they're still trying to do all their case studies and whatever they need to do to become registered, yeah, them having high caseloads, them seeing 6, 7 clients a day, 4 days a week, then having to do their group supervision and individual supervision and their case studies on top of it. And this is before they're even a general registered. So, like, they're already teaching this cohort of professionals that you can only be part of our club if you are willing to sacrifice your own well-being to get there. It's not setting them
Totally.
up for like, hey,
Totally.
you need to be thinking about this from the get-go. No, to join the club, you've got to treat yourself really, really last and poorly. And then maybe once you're feeling burnt out, then you can sort of address it then. So,
Yes. Yeah, that's tick.
I kind of watch on from the sidelines going, what's going on? Why are we doing this? But I guess I'm not up in the educational level of universities thinking about this stuff.
But do you think like that's happening in a lot of industries anyway that are university trained? Like I see it in I've got family who've been through the medical, or still going through it in and clients who I see who are in various different health professions, but also even in non-health professions, just that like in order to be in this club, like I think of lawyers, for example, is another one that and there's a high rate of burnout with them. And it just like, yeah, in order to be part of this club, basically, yeah, your well-being and your life outside of work, outside of study is it basically needs to be sacrificed. And it's just like, whoa. And then when they eventually do burn out, or even something even more catastrophic, or burnout's pretty catastrophic, but like, that it's like, well, you've set them up like already from that study perspective, you've set a culture in this industry of you don't matter. Like, yeah, your well-being, the human in you doesn't matter.
And it's like it's sad, like watching people who were really energized about being a psychologist or whatever other profession get to like the point where that they are a provisional or they're going general and they're like, oh, maybe this isn't right because they haven't been taken care of throughout that process. They haven't been given the tools themselves. They're just put out there into the profession and like go help people, but don't really actually understand what boundaries are for themselves and how to get the most out of their work environments, what is setting themselves up for long-term success look like versus just getting over the line to become a psychologist.
So that retention, it sounds like you're in organizations and the challenges that they face that, well, a lot of it is almost what I'm hearing from you and definitely my experience as well in my industry and in some of the industries I'm hearing that from the study, like from the undergraduate level or even the postgraduate, definitely sort of setting them up already with this behavioral pattern of do more, be more, sacrifice everything else, work comes first, this mentality that's ingrained from that environmental cultural of their industry from that early age, early stage. And if that person already has some of that behavioral pattern, which I know I came to this industry with some of that already, or a lot of that, that just reinforces it and yeah, and creates that mess later on or fairly soon on. Because we're losing, I know I think of teaching another industry. That the statistics there is that your newly graduated teachers are like leaving within 5 years. We can't retain our teachers. I think that's an Australian statistic. I don't know, yeah, if I've got that right. But
My wife, she's a teacher,
oh, there you
or
go.
she was a teacher, but now she's not. But I've worked with many teachers. They are one of the most stressed out group of people, because of the demands that they have on them. It's just like go, go, go all the time. And sort of like it's common knowledge that like they're all sort of creeping to the finish line come December. And then they're just pretty much wiped out for the holidays and then rinse and repeat. It's sad because it's that's also showing young kids what's expected for them and that the teachers are modeling behavior and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a systemic issue.
Definitely, definitely. But coming back to the hope, like I always feel like it's the hope, because as you said, there's organizations reaching out and wanting to change and be able to put the practices in place that they learn from experts like yourself about, what can help them with the issues that they're facing that are leading their staff to, to leave or not be well and staying or not being productive and staying. Is that yeah, there's things that can be done. Things like you've already mentioned with that one case of communication, helping with them. And that's part of emotional intelligence, isn't it? Being able to set aside our own narratives and be able to seek understanding of the other and then communicate in a way that can reach a resolution or an understanding or something, you know, in a safe way. You know, we don't have to agree with each other, but we can still respect. But what other things does your, you know, when you come in, I was just wondering, what are the hopeful things, you know, that can be put in place that really help businesses and organizations and teams to create that psychosocial safety? That's a term we all are knowing a lot more. You know, yeah.
Well, I don't think it's fair, like, for me to sort of expect that organizations that aren't health-based to be experts on how to get the most out of their emotional health of all their team and how to make them psychologically safe in every way. But I think it's up to them, if they don't have that information, to bring in the right people and allocate the budget and the resources to that. Because part of the legislation that has come out, organizations are responsible for that part of their staff's life, whether they know it or whether they're just starting to know it or whether they might know it in a couple of years. It's going to be a bigger thing in years to come. So organizations, I think, need to be starting to create a whole new way of seeing their staff. They're not just people who come in, clock in, clock out. They're actually emotional people, and they have rich emotional lives, and treating them with that sort of dignity and care. And I think that comes from setting up places within the workplace where it is safe to have those conversations with someone, instead of letting a team member go home with a whole heap of stories and information that they think's going on. Where do they actually go to debrief, untangle that before they leave the workplace? Is that a structure, thing that's set up at work? Do they have a safe environment to open up? Helping them understand their own psychology through sort of the onboarding process, and what anxiety looks like, or what burnout looks like, or what depression looks like, what are the statistics around that? So people are becoming more aware, well, when I notice that my psychology and my thinking's changing, what do I do then? I don't wait for it to get worse. I proactively go to that person because it's been clearly outlined in my onboarding, and it's been shown to me in the newsletters. And we had that workshop that also role played what to do when we feel psychologically unsafe. So they've got all these little things that have happened along the way that have shown them, okay, it's actually safe to go do that when I'm not feeling the best. So I think there's a lot of touch points that need to be sort of thought about. And that can't be done by one person in an organization. It kind of needs buy-in from the whole organization. The organizations are doing, there's many organizations that are doing great things for their teams, and they're the high performing teams, and they're the ones that retain their staff. They're the ones that are really all getting along well together.
Yeah, like the benefits, as you're mentioning there, of investing in this, because it is such a huge process and such an important point that you point out there. It can't come back to one individual and or one person in a particular role, because and often they're not health experts. They're not a psychologist trained or social work trained or whatever. Like, and it's not and it shouldn't be, like, you know, that's not the expectation, but that this cultural sort of approach, and it's more of a knowing and having a system in place of where to go to, so that employee feels they know what to do, you know, in that situation, and going to the person who or persons, which could be external or internal, that they can start that process. And I've also heard the important point of monitoring from the start, like in terms of not necessarily monitoring, like, but I mean, like, helping the client or helping the employee with the information to be able to then be aware, because they have the knowledge of what to look out for. And I mean, that's something we talk about in our industry, that and around the time I was trained, which was in sort of 2008 to 2013, that there wasn't any information around the how, like, the mental health risks that we could have, like in terms of looking out for burnout or vicarious trauma, or it's also known as secondary traumatic stress or compassion fatigue. I mean, we learned about depression, anxiety in order to be able to help others, but these other things we knew nothing about, and so we weren't then able to be aware of. And when we were learning about these other conditions, we weren't taught to be aware of them in ourselves. You know, what if this shows up for you? Because just because you're a psychologist doesn't mean that you're immune to these conditions. And just because you might have the know-how and the skills as well to look after yourselves, again, it doesn't mean that you're immune to these conditions, as I found out. So it's, like this need to, from the start, provide that education, awareness of your health matters. And these are the things to look out for, considering you're working in this industry, you know, because we have a lot of data around what are the risk factors in a lot of industries. And then, from the start, to help that client or help that person monitor, be aware, not, you know, hypervigilant, but be aware. And then processes in place. This is where to go to. And this is who to talk to start with, who might then be able to help you with the next step, you know, so they've got those safety. It's just, I've just heard about that importance of the education and monitoring in the workplace and that guidance, but not, it's not your responsibility to do the, you know, psychotherapy work, but, you know, but helping them to where they need to go.
Yeah. Because, like, I think the point we're sort of touching on is, like, being proactive is so much better than being reactive. Like, if you've come to me and you've said, I'm already burnt out, I'm can't get up, I can't get to work, the thought of answering that phone call just sends chills down my spine, I can't contact that client, like, you're already pretty far progressed.
And
there's not as much as I can do then to influence or make any sort of dramatic sort of suggestion that's going to solve the problem. But if we had a spoke a year ago, and you started to tell me, well, I'm just starting to feel a bit more cynical about work, I guess I feel a bit checked out from what these clients are telling me. Maybe I'm actually looking forward to when I get a cancellation. I'm not worried about it anymore. Then we'd be like, well, hang on a minute, let's just pause and stop and talk about these types of things, because I'm wondering whether this has been like a long-term thing or is this just emerging now. So trying to sort of catch it then before it's all the way down there, because like economically that is going to save everyone huge amounts of money, like if we catch it there versus there. Like our health system is already a bit stuffed, so if you have a psychologist leaving the industry prematurely, like that's really detrimental to a lot of people's health.
No, definitely. So true. And such, I know with the psychologists or even the health professionals I work with who are considering that they're wanting to step back, or they have, but just temporarily at the moment, they're very aware of the needs out there. And half the reason they stay and push through is because they know that. And so they, again, that sacrificing behavior, they push through, and because they want to be there to support their clients. They know there's so much need, but but end up making it worse and burning out. But but if this, that ongoing and sort of exploring, being able to catch it early, proactive, as you said, which is what we want to aim to do, so people don't get to that stage. I just think we've talked about a lot of things, and I feel like we've, you know, brought out a lot of the, you know, the factors that, you know, contribute to burnout and poor employee well-being in the workplace, some of those workplace factors, some of the things that can help and what to put in place. And the challenges, though, with doing that, organization challenges with retention as well and people leaving, and sometimes when burnout being too far gone as well, and they've already left. And even you started to touch upon the benefits, you know, well, with putting these practices in place, they retain the staff, you know, there's less employee turnover. We keep our professionals in the positions to be able to service the public, or, you know, obviously help the company, you know, produce what they're producing, whatever that might be. And, you know, work we know is so important to our well-being, you know, it can give us a sense of purpose and satisfaction in our life. So that's good for everybody. But also you mentioned too, it saves the company money.
Mm.
It ends up, it might be an outlay to start with, you know, financially putting these things in place and the time it takes to do these things. But I went to a webinar actually where an economist, is that where, I can't say it, but anyway, they, that's their thing, and there's a lot of studies looking at the savings, the benefits. So that's been proven by putting these psychosocial safety things into practice in workplaces. It will pan out in terms of productivity, financial stability for companies.
I read some statistics on that. I'm not sure what the actual dollar value was. I think it was like every dollar you spend, it's around $2 to $5 you get back on well-being initiatives. So like as a someone who's in private practice business, I sort of have to look at my own numbers and data. Like that is a very good return on an investment. And what an investment it is into someone's health and longevity as well. So it's like a very purposeful investment. It's not just let's go grab more revenue. It's actually, well, let's look at what's going to be best for everyone.
No, definitely. Sort of like to reframing it a bit in your mind, but having that dollar amount helps as well because, okay, you know, companies need to look at that. You know, workplaces need to see what, you know, if I invest in this, what is the investment output on a monetary? Because it's not cheap running a company, you know, you're running a private practice. Not that I've ever run a private practice, but it's just my single only one, and it's not cheap. So knowing that your investment in your or in your staff and their well-being will also help in the long run with the output too, and also the reframing, like the importance of those human beings that work in your team and their well-being, that is priceless, you know, as well. So having that, I was wondering, sharing, I always like to ask this question of my guests too. If there's just one thing you would love the audience to take away, whether they're a leader or a team, you know, we're all an employee in some shape or form, even if it's a sole practitioner or business owner, we're all working. Just, you know, a pearl of a wisdom, you know, something that you'd like them to take away and sort of sit with. What would that be that you would like to share?
That's a really good question. I guess the first thing that came to my mind, and I guess probably one of the things that I try to advocate and try to encourage and try to suggest to my clients on individual and the group programs, is to speak up, to sort of use your voice. If you notice things aren't actually in line with what they should be at your workplace, if you're noticing that the work demands are too high for the amount of time that you actually have, if you notice that you're not sleeping well, whatever the thing is that's going on for you, is to speak up, because yeah, you're important, and your well-being is important, and there are people in the organization or in your community who care and can give you that assistance, whether it's a professional or a friend or a loved one. Just speaking up is, I think, one of the biggest things.
Such an important message. And I love that you gave that variety of options because just in case it might not be, or whatever reason you don't feel safe to speak up at work, that utilize your community. You know, it might a friend, a family member. Sometimes it might be at the workplace, it might be a coworker, you know, that you feel safe enough. But reaching out to someone, speak up, don't keep it in. I did that. I kept it in. Speak up is definitely the most important thing to do. Speak
Sometimes
up.
we just someone need someone to reflect it back to us. Hang on a minute, you're actually working that amount of time, or you're doing that every day? That doesn't sound right. Like to sort of make us sort of look at our own situation a bit differently.
Yeah, I think it's I always share this with clients too, that once you speak it out loud to someone who then, you hear it back or hear it back through their lens, and it just you then, it opens your eyes up. And that's what can be so powerful about speaking up, you know, and whether it be a professional, personal, it's through hearing yourself back, but in a different way. That what they see that you may be seeing but dismissing, or because I remember my supervisor, actually no, ended up being my psychologist that I saw for my burnout, and she And she, being a psychologist as well, so knew my industry. And once she got to know what I was doing, she just went, "What?" Like, she just like, "Wow!" Like, she was just, even the complexity of the clients that I was seeing and what I was facing every day, and I just didn't see that. I just didn't see. I just thought, "Well, that's what everyone does, though." And that might be, but she was just focused on me, and she's like, "Whoa, that's a lot." And I was like, "Is it?"
So
Meanwhile,
one of
being
the
Delta,
things that people will do like is often suppress all those like challenging emotions that they have throughout their work life as a way to cope, but it's not actually making those emotions go away. It's just pushing them down, pushing them down, pushing them down. And it sounds like that psychologist got you sort of to look at that, like what have you been like pushing away to try cope with your life and your workplace?
It was really, 'cause yeah, I mean, I won't, go into the depths of mine, but yeah, it was a real eye-opener, because even though I was aware I wasn't okay, I didn't really connect with the depths of it. And she helped me do that and see that through, as you said, like, by speaking up. And I was really, she was probably the first person I divulged everything to, like how deep it all went. My supervisor a bit, and she helped me to that step. But yeah, because I've always found it easier to talk to professionals, speak up to professionals, than I have people in private life. I've gotten better at that. And that might be, me sharing my experience now. For others out there, it might be you feel more safer going to a complete stranger, going to your doctor or your psych, or finding a counselor, a social worker, and speaking up there. Whatever helps you feel like, well, whatever you feel safe enough to do now, and mine's expanded since then, as I've made steps. And the other thing I'd like to, for the audience to hear as well, Shannon, because you're doing a lot of, and we've got to hear, some fantastic work and working with organizations, but also individuals. And I was wondering if you could share, a little bit about sort of those resources or services that you do offer, in case anyone, an organization out there, a team, an individual want to touch base with your work. Yeah, what things do you?
So having a look on my website would be the place to have a look, and you can have a look at our different offerings and stuff like that. But two of the ones that we're doing more of this year is we've got a workshop and a series of workshops called Tapping into the Strengths of Your Neurodiverse Workforce. So that's uncovering all the hidden strengths that are right in front of you, because the neurodiverse workforce is quite large, but it's just not really spoken about that much. So we're helping organizations really get the most out of their whole organization and utilizing all the strengths. Because when we're utilizing those strengths correctly, the result is there's less burnout and there's more sort of integration between what's going on for different types of people at workplaces. So that's one of them. And the other one is a burnout to balance program. So that's a program that we do with organizations and also just group-based individuals. So for example, someone was coming to see a psychologist, we would offer them to potentially go into that if they wanted to, instead of just going into individual psychology. So I think you've got a group program as well. So kind of similar to that.
Mine's more of a like a support base, like more of an opportunity to share what's going on and the challenges, whilst also providing knowledge and skills, but first and foremost, more support type. With your burnout to balance, is there, a particular, I mean, I know they can go on your website, and I'll leave that in the session notes for them to peruse, but is there particular things you cover in your burnout to balance?
So we did it do it over 6 weeks, and it's education on things like the nervous system and how to regulate your emotions and what is a high performer actually in a workplace, sort of unpacking some of those unsaid things that we've talked about, and when is enough, trying to get them to become more self-aware of their own sort of internal dialogue about how they should be going to work and what is the expectations they put on themselves. So really empowering them to make more thought out long-term decisions about their health and well-being, and giving them the practical tools. So doing like in-person stuff, so online, so they can meet other people going through similar things, but also having the the portal to log on to go through some module-based stuff as well. Yeah.
That's really lovely. It's almost, not almost, it is empowering the individual so they can go into their workplace as well with this wisdom, which also then helped out the workplace. But you also, yeah, do this with the organizations as well.
Yeah.
So it
Yeah.
empowers them to understand all of this as well,
Yeah.
and reflect on themselves. Yeah, that top down. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's good.
so yeah, trying to depending on whether it's for the individual or organization, we kind
Yeah.
of have
Oh.
similar sort of things for both of them, but we just deploy them a little bit differently. So we try to educate them in a similar way. Yeah.
Yeah, tweaking to suit the the client base. I love also the work you mentioned, the program there with the strength based around neurodiversity in workplaces. And I feel like, geez, I need you to come on another episode.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about it. That's one of my biggest passions.
Oh no, that'd be lovely, definitely, because that's another area that I'd like to have a conversation with someone in the know to provide that to the audience, because I'm hearing and certainly coming across burnout within the neurodiverse community. And just to be clear for maybe people listening who are not as informative around that area, so we're talking attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactive. Not that I like using the disorder, but ADHDs, ADDs, autism, but also I'm not sure. And it's only something I discovered in the last couple of years, but highly sensitive person, HSPs, is that something you're familiar with or work within?
And things like dyslexia,
Oh, sorry. Yep.
dyspraxia, and so it's kind of like an
Yeah.
umbrella term with for all the sort of different processing disorders. So but the main ones, like you said, like ASD and ADHD and those types of ones that I sort of frequently work with and sort of help educate around burnout, because they're some of the, I guess over the last few years, for some reason or another, I've gravitated to that work and they've gravitated towards me, probably because my lived experience of ADHD and sort of that kind of work. But yeah, that they're experiencing burnout at a high rate as well. That I kind of described that kind of group of people. They have a very good accelerator in the car, like they can absolutely floor it, but their brakes are a little bit sticky. It doesn't actually stop, and then they're more used to just using the accelerator to feel good, to sort of chase dopamine or to chase sort of stimulation, and that is a sort of a long-term recipe for burnout.
Oh, I love that analogy. That really, I'm gonna sit with that. But that such a needed, important area of education and understanding for our organizations as well, because there's a large, percentage. And my understanding is that we are still working in a way, or our environment is set up in life and work for neurotypical. And so that's not going to be conducive to the well-being of neurodiverse in those work environments. So but again, what we don't know, we don't know, so educating to understand that. And it's an area actually that I'm starting, just because I'm seeing a lot of clients who are coming who are questioning that and then end up going down the route of exploring that and getting assessment with a professional who's able to. And yeah, that's been part of their burnout or big part of it. So it's definitely an area that I'm really keen on exploring. Is that I haven't had any formal diagnosis, but recognize that HSP is definitely part of my neurodiversity. I'm not sure if there's anything else, but it's just that awareness now of how do I support that by creating an environment that doesn't impede on that too much, But anyway,
Because
yeah, it's so important.
if you are sensitive to certain things, whether it's auditory or visual or styles of communication, whatever the sensitivity is, like you have to use a hell of a lot more resources to manage that. So you're already sort of working on overdrive just day to day. So you're starting to become burnt out if you're not aware that's going on. So the thing that I frequently see is people undiagnosed who are just chronically exhausted, because of their processing issues and the way that their brain sort of works. And they're constantly thinking they're not good enough, got to do more, got to do more, but it's just undiagnosed and not treated. So giving them that sort of information is like invaluable.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I've seen with the women, and it's been mainly women in my experience so far, that it's just, it's been a huge process and lots of ups and down feelings about it, but this overall sense of, oh, okay, this makes sense. This is why I've, you know, feel this way all the time. And it's not, the thing that they always share with me is that the shame lifts, like, you know, that feeling that I'm not enough, I'm not doing enough. But when they realize, okay, this is about my neurodiversity, this is about how I'm wired, and nothing to do with my inability, or characteristic flaws or anything like that. It's just, it's that. And it helps lift that shame around it, or it starts to help with that. So it's and that's, it's definitely an area we could talk, another episode. We'll definitely have you back. I do have someone coming on in the future who's talking to autism burnout, but it would be great to have quite a number of episodes exploring this, so I'll put you on my list for that to come
of
back
course,
and,
no worries.
But we've got a little snippet there at the end for the audience. Thank you so much. I'll leave your details for the listeners in the session notes. I'll leave Shannon's details, his website, anything that he's left me to connect with his work, and please do go check him out. But I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, Shannon, to, you know, carve out this time in your schedule to come on and share your wisdom and your experience with the audience. So thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Shannon.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to When Burnout Becomes Reality podcast. This pod relies on the power of its listeners to push it out to the four corners of the earth in hope that it reaches as many people in need as possible. So please like, share, follow, comment, or leave a review. Pay it forward, and I will be forever grateful. If you'd like to share your burnout to recovery experience, or you are an expert working in the burnout field and would like to share your wisdom on the pod, please email me at shannonswales@burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To keep up to date with episode releases, please follow us on your favorite podcast provider, or by joining our mailing list at www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com. To check out the burnout psychology services on offer at Burnout Psychology Support, my telehealth practice, visit www.burnoutpsychologysupport.com/psychology services. Once again, thank you for listening, and please take care of yourself. Bye for now. The top of 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 the top of